gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Abraham versus WGI. Ms. Miller.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. My name is Leanne Miller, and I represent the appellant, Cyriac Abraham. Mr. Abraham respectfully requests that this court, on de novo review, reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment for two reasons. First, the district court erred in considering extrinsic evidence in direct violation of the parole evidence rule. Second, even if the district court correctly considered this evidence, it still erred in resolving a dispute regarding the party's intention in the formation of the contract. Turning to the first issue, the district court inappropriately considered parole evidence which conflicted with a negotiated term of the contract. Contract interpretation involves conclusions of law and, as such, is governed by state law. A contract is presumed to be the final expression of the party's intent and a complete integration of all negotiated terms.
Here's what I'd like to ask you. What are your claim damages? Because if an employer gives an employee the title and the salary that was promised, but less work to do, what are the employee's damages?
Your Honor, the damages at issue do meet the jurisdictional amount as referenced by the district court. Furthermore, in terms of his specific damages, Mr. Abraham contends that he did not receive the experience and thus advance in his career by receiving the incorrect duties underneath this title.
Well,
I'm sorry, I didn't know if there was a question.
Employers need to be able to assign work with some flexibility, you know, as a job, as the needs of a job require. Those aren't always static. And, you know, to find otherwise could very easily grind work operations to a halt.
Yes, Your Honor. However, in this industry, there are two distinct job titles and job duties. There's a project control manager and a lead control scheduler. The lead scheduler job is separate from the project control managers because of the scope of the jobs in this industry.
But the big problem is the offer letter doesn't say anything about the duties. It just gives the title, gives the pay, doesn't spell it out. So it may very well be in the industry. It has a special meaning, but that special meaning never got into the contract.
Your Honor, I'd like to draw your attention also to Frucon's offer, however, and this is demonstrative precisely of what Your Honor just stated, that in the industry, this title carries meaning. Just as in the offer by WGI, Frucon's offer, found at the record 29-5, also 19-1, it is exactly the same as WGI, in which they said, we are pleased to offer you the job of project control manager. That offer, synonymous to WGI, did not delineate the scope of the duties.
Yeah, but that's not the offer we're dealing with here.
No, Your Honor. I merely use it as illustrative to show that this title carries meaning and duties within this industry.
But do you concede that the letter that he received did not promise him any specific job duties? Would you concede that?
Yes, Your Honor. I would concede there are no duties within that offer letter.
Okay. So if that's the case, then we go back to point number one. Because if it did, then a court is entitled to look into extrinsic evidence to see what those duties were. And that evidence clearly seems to demonstrate that he knew that he was being hired with the title project manager so that he might receive a higher salary, but that he would be performing the duties of a scheduler.
Your Honor, We would still contest point one, whether the district court appropriately considered the extrinsic evidence. However, assuming arguendo that it did, there still presented a material fact between the intention of the parties. And in fact, since this issue involves the intention of the parties at the time the contract was entered into, there's therefore a clearly defined issue of fact which should have gone to the jury.
Yes, but he accepted the subsequent explanation of what his duties would be, and said, you know, there was nothing in the email that he disagreed with.
Your Honor is referring to the May 2005 emails. In those emails, Mr. Abraham first raised that he understood he was being hired as a project control manager and, in fact, would not have taken the job if he was not offered that specific job. In the subsequent emails, as Your Honor pointed out,
he wanted the title, and he continues to use that title to represent that he was a project, that he had project manager duties.
He continues to use a title because he was given the title.
He continues to make representations about what his work was.
He continues to make representations as to the title because, again, in the
not
industry,
as to the title, as to what he did, that he was a project control manager rather than just being paid as a project control manager while having the lesser duties of a scheduler.
Well, Your Honor, perhaps on his resume and in his subsequent job applications, he does indeed put that. However, we're not privy to the discussions that he engages in prior to being hired, in which he very well may explain to his employers that though he carried the title, he did not have the subsequent duties.
I don't understand. You make an argument. I'm really baffled by this, that somehow objection of parole evidence is not waivable?
Correct, Your Honor.
That's not true. You can waive anything except standing.
With all due respect, Your Honor, parole evidence is a substantive
law. It doesn't matter. Litigants are constantly waiving substantive rights. There's nothing more common.
With all due respect, Your Honor, pursuant to Wisconsin law, however, Wisconsin clearly states that it doesn't matter if there's an objection.
That doesn't matter either, because procedures are governed by federal law, what you can waive when you're in a federal court. Federal procedure governs, not Wisconsin state procedure.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I would point you to a case which I believe Your Honor decided, Moore versus Metro East Manufacturing Company, 711 F2nd 69.
Is this cited in your brief?
No, Your Honor, it's not. And I recognize that.
Told the other side at your...
Your Honor, this was merely in response. It's something.
Yes, but if you want to cite cases that aren't in your brief, you're supposed to notify the other side so they can prepare to respond.
Yes, Your Honor. And
you didn't do.
I did not do that, Your Honor.
You should do that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, I want to get back to this email Judge Posner asked you about, where he explains, you know, he writes and says, hey, I'm not getting the duties I'm supposed to. Then he gets an email back from Villa who says, you know, there was a misunderstanding. And then Abram says, there's nothing I can disagree with except for the fact that I'm not in the loop on many issues where I need to be on this project. I'm set because various discussions have taken place without me where schedule inputs were very important. Let us leave this discussion here.
Your Honor, as with any employee, he was merely attempting to reconcile the differences between he and his employer with that email. He had expressed his concern. His concern was not addressed in the way he wanted, and he wanted to continue on. With all due respect, I see I am cutting into my rebuttal time.
Another question for you. Why didn't he take the California job?
Your Honor, he did not take the California job because when WGI responded with a synonymous position and comparable salary.
Not comparable salary. Significantly lower salary. And he lives in California. His family is in California. Why does he go to Wisconsin, take a job, take a similar job, although it turns out to be a lesser job because it doesn't have the project control manager responsibilities that he would have had in the California job? And that's where his family is. So why did he turn that down in favor of this job?
Your Honor, perhaps he felt that this company had more opportunities for upward advancement.
Is there anything in the record about this? I'm very suspicious that he was offered that job in California, because I can't think of any reason why he would have turned it down in favor of this job.
Your Honor, just to clarify, when you say you're suspicious that he was offered the job, are you debating that he had another job offer?
Yes.
There is actually an offer letter included in the record at 29-5, 19-1.
I'm sorry, what is that citation?
It's 29-5 because this court broke up the volumes into five different volumes, and then within that volume, it's 19-1, and that is the offer by Furcon.
Okay.
And I see my time is concluded.
That's fine. Well, we'll give you more time when you
thank you,
after
Your
we've
Honor.
Heard from Mr. Duffy.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I am Bob Duffy, and along with Nick Anderson, my co-counsel, I represent WGI, now known as URS Energy and Construction. This is a simple breach of contract case involving an offer of employment letter which offered the plaintiff a title, a salary, and a place of employment, and nothing else.
Was there any submitted evidence in the record about what contracts between the Washington Group and its employees ordinarily looked like? You know, in other words, was his letter agreement typical, or did the Washington Group normally hand out a more detailed job description?
Yes. Your Honor, there's no evidence in the record of which I'm aware that talked about other offers of employment or contracts that WGI may have provided.
But so did the Washington Group intend the letter to be the final expression of the agreement between the company and Mr. Abraham?
Well, I would think not, Your Honor. I mean, I think on its face the letter is all of one paragraph, and it's very simple. It says you're going to get a title, you're going to get a salary, and a place of employment. There seems to be a dispute about, well, what are the duties? Well, obviously the parties intended him to do something other than have a title. So one would think that extrinsic evidence would be important to consider for the purposes of determining what exactly was he to do.
Well, tell me this. Does it matter, in your view, what Washington Group's job description document says about the various duties of project manager and schedulers?
It doesn't matter for lots of reasons, Your Honor. First of all, because it's undisputed, at least the facts, as the court accepted and had to as a result of the procedure, that he did not get the job description before he accepted the employment and began his employment. But secondly, he was an at-will employee, and of course, as you've pointed out, when one is an at-will employee, they have to have their job responsibilities modified over time. And so whether the job description said X or Y, it doesn't really matter. As long as they're giving him a title, which they did, they're paying him his salary, which they did, they're offering, they're requiring him to provide certain duties.
So is your bottom line that you could hire someone as a project control manager and you could make them do anything,
well,
essentially?
I mean, yes, Your Honor. At some point, you have to worry about misrepresentation. You wouldn't want to be in a situation where you were promising someone that they'd be doing something and then do a bait and switch, but those aren't the facts here. And the misrepresentation claims are no longer before the court. So, yes, it is our position that we could say that you're going to be hired in with the title of this and you could have responsibilities which may be inconsistent.
Are there any cases like this? There have, of course, been cases involving discrimination, you know, hiring people and not giving them responsibilities, you know. But are there cases like pure breach of contract cases involving failure to meet the expectations of the employee about the scope of duties?
Well, that was one of the arguments that we made, Your Honor, is that it really, the cause of action in this case, as the facts are presented, are really inconsistent with public policy for the same reason that Judge Rovner pointed out the need for flexibility. There is one case that was cited as the Badger Wholesale decision, and it involved an at-will employee. It was a situation, though, where it was a salesperson who was promised an exclusive territory.
Oh.
And in that case, the employee got to the employer and found out it wasn't an exclusive territory. He was competing with six other people. And in 17 days, the employer fired him for lack of sales. And so the court in that case said, well, that sounds like a breach of contract.
Well, that is classic bait and switch.
Yes, it is.
Is Ms. Miller correct that he had a firm offer from this California firm? Because I was just puzzled why he would turn down an offer that paid more, was clearly for a project control manager, and it's in his home state where his family is, and it's going from beautiful California.
Uh-oh.
Well, Your Honor, it's unclear in the record as to why he accepted WGI's offer of employment. One can speculate as to it. It certainly is accurate, as Attorney Miller said, that there was an offer letter that was presented. It's also accurate to say that employment, as it turned out, would have ended in a few months, whereas employment with WGI continued for a long period of time.
That's important. Of course. Yeah.
That's correct. Thank you. So, as I was saying, this is a simple breach of employment offer case. It seems to be about the question of duties. The duties were never defined in the employment offer. All that was offered was a title. And although there's been discussions about parole evidence and whether the court improperly considered parole evidence, in fact, if you look carefully at Judge Crabb's decision, as it relates to the breach of contract claim, she didn't consider parole evidence. What she said, if you look at page 10 of her decision, of her March 26, 2013 decision, when she was analyzing part of the misrepresentation claims, which are no longer before the court, what she said was the plaintiff's offer letter said that he would have the title, in quotes, of project control manager, but did not state that he would be performing the duties of a project control manager. So Judge Crabb looked to the letter itself and interpreted the letter based upon what it said. And, of course, what Judge Crabb found was factual. Then when she went to the breach of contract portion of her analysis, she did make the statement that the plaintiff's breach of contract claim also fails for the same reasons as the misrepresentation claims, but then she clarified why she said that. The next sentence at page 12 of her decision was, plaintiff has identified no contract, oral or written, in which the defendant promised to give the plaintiff specific job duties that were different from those to which the plaintiff was assigned. So the judge did not consider parole evidence. The judge looked at the offer letter and said, the offer letter doesn't provide duties. I can't find a breach of contract as it relates to duties. But if we are to say that the argument about parole evidence was not waived, and Your Honor, it is our position that federal law applies and that you can waive this issue, but even if we argue that you can't waive it, it would have been appropriate in this case for the court to consider parole evidence, at least under the analysis that the plaintiff is presenting, because the plaintiff is saying that somehow the term title is ambiguous. It isn't defined by itself. We think that you look to a dictionary definition, and it's pretty clear a title is something conferred upon someone. He was given the title. He doesn't dispute that. So we think it's plain, but under the argument made by the plaintiff, let's just accept for the sake that maybe it is ambiguous. Well, then you go to extrinsic evidence. The extrinsic evidence establishes clearly that he wasn't hired to be a project control manager to perform the duties of a project control manager. And it was very clear as to why. He applied for a lead scheduler. He was interviewed for a lead scheduler. Mr. Villa told him he would be a lead scheduler. And then he came back and said, oh, by the way, I've got a better offer somewhere else for more money. And because they needed a lead scheduler, they said to him, fine, we'll give you a higher salary. We'll give you the title of project control manager because we have to satisfy your salary demands, but you're a lead scheduler. And as you pointed out, Judge Posner, in his subsequent email, a year into his employment, he as much as concedes that's exactly what happened. So there is no dispute as it relates to as to what he was promised, even if one is to consider parole evidence or extrinsic evidence. So for those reasons, we again request that the court affirm Judge Crabb's decision and deny the appeal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dove. Ms. Miller, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you want.
May it please the court. WGI's...
You represent. What is the citation of that case you mentioned? You said 711F...
F-2nd, 69, yeah. And that was decided by this circuit in 1983.
What was the page number?
I don't have the page number with me, Your Honor.
The first page number.
Oh, sorry, 711F-2nd, 69.
69.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks.
And that case by this court states that the parole evidence rule is substantive in nature, even though it has a procedural name, and as such, state law applies. In this case, the state law...
That's certainly true. The question is whether waiver doctrine is procedural or substantive.
Pursuant to Wisconsin law, if we look at this, Wisconsin law states that the parole evidence objection need not be made or even contemporaneous, as in the case in Re Spring Valley Meet.
That is a procedural proposition, right, about what is it that you have to raise and what can you waive, right?
Yes, Your Honor. However, in this case,
In federal court, you're governed by federal, you know, jurisdictional notions and waiver is an example, right? Usually if you waived something, you can't argue it anymore, right? That's a procedural proposition. What will a court consider if you fail to make a certain type of argument, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
If you want to argue standing, then that's never waived. And some things are waived and some things are not.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's federal law governing procedure in federal cases.
Yes, Your Honor. And I respectfully disagree in this particular case. Simply because of the case out of this circuit, we look to that as being controlling and stating that we look to the state's law, and Wisconsin law clearly has precedent that a parole evidence objection need not be made contemporaneously.
What if Wisconsin law was that to bring a breach of contract suit, you don't have to show that that you have standing.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure I understand your question.
Suppose you could say X breached a contract with Y. I'm very annoyed by that. I'm not a party. I am not affected by it. It happened in, you know, Outer Mongolia, but it bothers me. So I want to sue the alleged breaker of the contract, right? And suppose Wisconsin said, well, in breach of contract case, there's no standing requirement. You can sue on a breach of contract between anybody anywhere.
Your Honor,
that would not be... Now, if that case were removed to federal court, no standing rule of Wisconsin would not be enforced.
Correct, Your Honor.
That.
Yes, absolutely. I would agree with that. However, in this case, we would respect that this court do apply Wisconsin law because this is a substantive issue that affects the rights of the parties. And as such, appellant respectfully
requests... Waiver
request,
is not substantive.
No, Your Honor, but the consideration of parole evidence...
Sure, but that's not the issue. The issue is not the applicability of parole evidence doctrine, but whether you can raise it after having failed to raise it in the district court.
Even if this court determines that Mr. Abraham waived his parole evidence objection, we would still request that this court reverse the district court because of a materially disputed issue of fact as to the intention of the parties when the contract was formed. For this reason, Mr. Abraham respectfully requests such relief. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Miller and Mr. Duffy.